Welcome to Building My Legacy Podcast. This podcast is designed for leaders and entrepreneurs who want to leave a legacy and will provide strategies that focus upon key elements for legacy creation, determining your desired impact and its benefit, increasing your legacy's reach by engaging key stakeholders, planning, prioritizing, and executing. Here's your host, Dr. Lois Sonstegard.
Welcome, everybody, to today's Building My Legacy podcast. I have with me today Maria Santiago. Maria has a company that is called Home Health Aid Training Institute. She deals with a part of life that, well, many of us don't think about it until we're stuck. We have to do something about an elderly person or somebody in our life that has a healthcare issue. So, Maria, tell the audience, please. How did you get into doing training for home health care? But first, how did you get into just home health care at all?
Well, as a child growing up in the wonderful country of Trinidad and Tobago, I had the opportunity to sit with the older folks in our neighborhood as everyone else would go to church on the Saturday evenings for confession. We would leave, I would be, you know, caring for different folks in our community, having the comic books and the custard left so that way I can keep companionship while everyone went to church.
You know what? It's fun to be able to sit and have companionship with elderly. You learn a lot from them. There was a reason you were there to be with them because they had healthcare issues. They weren't able to go to church themselves, or what was it that caused you to be sitting with them?
Some of the reasons of healthcare reasons, some of the reasons I think the universe just was putting me in training, if you ask, of caring for people. But also, like you said, there are times that you don't have the strength to move at that specific moment, and having great companionship, trusted companionship is what I think our neighbors look for. And that is what I delivered.
So, Maria, I think it's brilliant and beautiful that you have a service that really reaches out and meets the needs of people. You talk a lot about compassion. Talk a little bit about why. Why do you find that to be so important?
I would tell you something, Lois. You cannot buy compassion. Mm-hmm. And it's not about money. People, when you take your heart into caring, you take your heart, love is the most important feature. And people need to be cared for. They need to be understood. And when you're a senior, understanding, you've lived a long life and you're at the stage of your life that either you have a dementia problem, Parkinson's, your strength is not intact. And so you need someone to be there to assist you at that moment in time. And, you know, compassion is priceless. It really is.
It's compassion and having it delivered with allowing the person to maintain dignity, I think is so important. I have an elderly friend right now who just moved into assisted living. And for her, the biggest issue was her own integrity. I mean, she was a power horse of a worker in her lifetime. Used to be in charge of everything, used to give orders to everybody. And now she finds herself being told what to do, how to do it, when to do it. And that sense of self, that sense of who am I anymore? I watch it, and it's such a difficult thing for her to come to grips with. So I just appreciate how that's a focus for you. Maria, tell the audience a little bit about your training. Who do you train?
We train folks from all walks of life. We've basically touched, I think, every, you know, piece of the world, from Tunisia to the Caribbean islands, to the African continent, to the Spanish continents, to every single part of the world, I believe, that I've met someone from. And basically, they take that care, they take that warmth with them, and they take it to the different facilities, the different home care agencies that hire them, and the wonderful people that you meet along the way. And, you know, the diversity, it's different, but everyone brings love to the table first and foremost.
Everybody brings love to the table. Wow. Wow. That is so, so important. So let's say I'm interested. What are the criteria? What do I have to have to come and enter your school, your institute?
Well, we are licensed by the Board of Education, and one of their criteria is having a high school diploma or a sixth grade level of education preferred. So if you have a high school diploma from your country, you can bring it along. And if you don't, we have a test that we can give you an entrance exam. And once you pass that exam, then you're well on your way to sitting in the class for 83 hours for the home health aide training and 125 hours to be a certified home health aide.
Wow.
Nursing assistant.
Okay. So for a nursing assistant and also for a home aide.
Yes.
So what I'm hearing you say, since you do the training, you're in New York. I could be in Minnesota, which is where I am, right?
Oh.
And I could have a need for in my home health agency for more trained people. I could contact you and you would train them?
Yes. New York is a very standalone training piece. We do not do any online training. Everyone has to sit in a classroom. They have to understand the 75 hours of training in the classroom and 8 hours of hands-on in an assisted living facility. And then with the 125 hours, it's 95 hours in the classroom and 30 hours in an assisted living. Basically, once you're finished your training with us, we take you to a facility under the directions of a registered nurse, and we continue to give you hands-on experience. So you get to feel and touch someone, and you get to share that care, and you get to answer questions and get them answered and just feel what it feels like to be in that environment. And you have one more chance, of course, to say, do I really want to do this? Do I really have the heart for this? And if that's the part that you're going to play in someone's end of life, then we certify you and you're on your way.
So how many students do you train in a year?
This year, we were lucky enough to train 976 students. We worked very hard. We have day, evenings, and weekend classes, and our nurses came out after COVID. We just bravaded COVID and trained, and that gave us some more, energy to go on, because we're now entering our sixth year as a training school, a nonprofit organization that we're working so diligently and hard to ensure that we could train right and have the right compatibility for care in the world.
Maria, what you're doing is really important work. What are your challenges? What makes it hard for you to train more students or to do the quality or type of work that you want to do? Are there challenges that you face?
Well, one of the major challenges that is faced in the home health aid industry as we speak is the fact that home care workers feel that they're not recognized monetarily sufficiently. And so we're moving in a direction with their Fair Pay for Home Care Foundation on December 15th. They are going to be coming to our office, and everyone from every state that wants to come in can come in. We are asking all our legislators and our congressmen and, of course, our wonderful president to look into raising the price for care, so that way, you know, home care workers can meet their demands and meet their own needs financially. And as they take love into their hearts to care for folks, they can feel that financially it's rewarding as well.
Okay, wonderful. So you've got a wide group of people, 997. You're creating this, you're working on better pay. Yes. So that it's a more appealing career path for people. You also talk about only 34% of patients are confident in their healthcare workers. What happened? Why?
I think that some of the healthcare workers that weren't trained correctly or got despondent because they weren't getting, they had to do 3 and 4 caregivers, jobs to meet their needs. They got burnt out in the interim. And when you're burnt out, it's just a shell. You're working with a straw and you can't quite deliver the necessary love that you want to share with someone. And so I think that's one of the reasons why we have that 34%. But I'm definitely moving in a direction to change that.
I think you are. You're one person reaching 997 people. Yes. How many people drop out once they come and start training?
I would say we have like a 2% of folks that come in and decided that they either don't feel that this is confident, or we see in the classroom that they are not. We put our students through a vigorous test. We would leave them sitting for an hour and you know, just look at their attitude. And sometimes there's some people we say, although you've paid, we don't think you're in the right profession. And maybe you may want to just take your money back and do something else that you feel more confident in. And half the times you find out, they say, you know what, I was sitting here thinking this was not for me. So I'm happy that you brought this to my attention. And they would bow gracefully. Other than that, some people, financially, to meet the cost of the school tuition, sometimes it's a challenge. And we get other agencies to come in and pay for them so they can get a job and they can move on forward and, you know, be happy and equipped with a certification to care.
Okay, so you work with agencies that are needing employees, home healthcare aides, and they at time cover the cost of the training. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. So it's really quite a career opportunity for people who maybe this is their first step in that healthcare trajectory, but they get their foot in and they get the basics and they get a job so they can move forward. It's a huge gift that you give people. You talk about compassion. Why are we missing compassion today?
Why are we missing compassion? Compassion cannot be bought.
Tell me more about that.
Compassion comes straight from the love of wanting to absolutely give yourself. If I'm sitting and I'm caring for Lois, I cannot think about anything else but the care for Lois. I have to think about, when you went, you know, how am I going to care for you with the life that you've lived prior? What books am I going to read for you? What interest did you have prior that I can still keep the spark with you? Aging is not the end until it's the end. And you have to keep folks alive and keep them happy and keep them compassionate and keep them with the understanding that you're kind and you can share care.
So part of what I'm hearing you say, Maria, is you get the essence of what a person's life is all about, and you try and meet them there at where their life is so that they can continue to have that sense of identity, their sense of who they are, their purpose perhaps in life. Am I hearing you right?
You are certainly hearing me right. And I would tell you, every single human being that you meet along the way that now needs your care, that you've never met before, that you never knew how their 80 years of living prior to you meeting them in this position now, either weak, either dementia, either whatever the situation needs are to be met at that position of their lives, you have to pick it up from there and pick it up with compassion. Pick it up with all the love and all the faith that you have in God to ensure that you're delivering, because one day it will be your turn.
One day it'll be your turn. And, you know, who will advocate for you when it's your turn?
That's correct.
It's so interesting. I have this elderly friend who has just now moved into assisted living. And what's interesting in watching her process is she was a shaker and mover in her lifetime. People took orders from her. She made systems jump, you know, at her, at the snap of a finger. And now she finds herself in the situation of being told what to do, when to do it, how to do it. Things as simple as taking a bath, for example, is controlled by somebody else, the timing of it. And I find one of the things that she struggles with the most is that sense of still being who she is. So what's interesting is she spends a lot of time organizing all of us, her friends, so she can demand that we do certain things. It allows her to have that past, but that it's part of her identity. And I'm hearing you really sort out who a person is so you can help them. Have a story that you want to share along that line?
Yes. We had a powerful person. She actually was in a nunnery. She was a nun. And I love to share her story because being a nun and resigning from the nunnery is not easy to get married. And like your friend, she's a very powerful person, was one of the head persons of the libraries, the big library in the city. And
in Manhattan now, the Manhattan.
Manhattan, okay. Yes.
Yeah.
And as her time drew closer, she had cancer of the navel. And it was just amazing how God delivered her. No pain. However, with the dementia and the growth, she knew something was not right. And in her sliver of times that she would come into good memory, she'd be so kind and she'd be so sweet. And she always had the Bible, always pray. But we would always cater to her. And giving her anything she needed and wanted at the moments that she needed it and wanted it was very, very compassionate and very caring for us to deliver. And she would always say, oh my God, I feel like a queen. And she knew that everyone circled around her and circled around her with the compassion that she deserved. If she wanted to eat our bagel and cream cheese and she only wanted half, we would give her half and then we would have three other things. Would you like cream cheese and jelly instead? Would you like a croissant instead? Would you like, she would like to say, I want a glass of wine. So we would get the Martinelli's wine, the grape, and we would put it in a wine glass and we'd give it to her. And if her mind was in the right mode and in the now, she would know that that was not wine. And it would be so funny the way she said, you know, she says, this tastes good, but it doesn't taste like red wine. And it was just a pleasure to serve and to care for her until one Friday morning when she said goodbye. And everyone was, she transitioned. God, I know she's in heaven and she, but it gives you more oomph to care for someone else, to see how care can radiate and really be, make someone feel comfortable in their time.
You know, right now today with the amount of burnout that we're experiencing in the workplace, it's not just healthcare. We're seeing it in businesses in general, but I think healthcare has suffered a lot. What has happened to home healthcare since COVID? How have you been impacted?
Well, of course, we've had a lot of home healthcare workers that have passed away in the interim of caring and the bravado of going into care into the hospitals, the nursing homes and homes as well. There's a huge shortage. And so what we have done is work with this foundation, Fair Pay for Home Care, that would allow home care workers to not feel burnt out by having to work three jobs because compensation is not in its entirety. It's not a financial feasible job. And people are just really taking their hearts into the job. So we've teamed up with Fair Pay for Home Care. I'm sitting on the foundation as well. And we are rallying to change the face of the compensation department and allow workers to come out and be really not only enthused with their love, but they can be compensated accordingly.
Compensation is important, isn't it? And we want our friends and family cared for tenderly and lovingly. And it does come with a price. Many times, though, I also watch families struggle with well, mom needs help, but we can't pay for it. How do we do it? Right. So there's that push and pull. And so you often look for the least expensive resources, which may or may not be the best thing for mom or your loved one. Your workers come to you from backgrounds with high school education or at least sixth grade level capabilities. You train them. How many will go on after their home health? Will they go on to other degrees, nursing or other fields?
We've seen quite a lot of our students become nurses, and we've always supported them. We have a membership in our school that we keep in touch with our students. We help them along the way. And on the topic of sometimes people cannot care because they don't have the resources to do so, we have a volunteer team that we send out. That if someone would call in and say, I don't have any money, but I need care. I would find girls some of our members to go out and care. We would not leave anyone to call in and say that they did not have any resources financially and say, oh, well, we can't help you. If I have to go out there myself, I generally go out. We get a team together. We make sure they have food. We make sure they have a change of clothes, and we find the right departments from the governmental end that can assist them with care as well. But 97% of our students move on to become caring and sharing care in America, sharing care around the world, and just predominantly getting into a higher degree, being RNs, licensed practical nurses, is beautiful.
So you provide people with that stepping stone. They can come, and often your education is paid for by the institutions that send them for training. So what an opportunity to begin that career stepping stone, right?
Yes, it's a great opportunity.
I also marvel at the fact that you have a volunteer force for people who can't afford healthcare. And when I'm listening to that, I'm thinking, wow, why don't churches partner with you so they can have their own volunteer groups that are knowledgeable enough so that they can actually be useful or helpful? But what a gift.
You know, Lois, I have to tell you, we are always looking for ways and means to reach out to people. And so one of our pastors that's associated with our schools that, of course, brings folks to be trained, he has reached out to 112 churches. And that's what we do for the last 4 weeks. I've gone to churches on Sunday mornings to present our school training and speak about how they can come and be trained. And then we've advocated with other home care agencies that would pay for folks to come in and train so that they can have that volunteer force in their churches.
Wow. So those of you who are listening, if you know or have a resource, somebody that could be trained, that could bring resources to your community, Maria is a great resource for you. Maria, what have we left out that we haven't talked about that we should talk about before we conclude?
I think, Lois, we've touched just about every topic. We urge everyone that's having a loved one out there to understand that loneliness is lonely. And don't leave anyone lonely. Be there, phone call, visits. People want to feel connected.
There's anything we've learned since COVID, it's please, please let me connect.
Yes. Yeah. Loneliness is a deprivation. It's like not having dinner at nights.
So true. Maria, thank you so much for being with us today.
You're very welcome, Lois. Thanks for having me.
You are so welcome. And for those of you who are listening, we will have information about Maria in our show notes so that you have a resource that you can contact. Especially if you are thinking about volunteer programs in your community or you need training for home health aides, this is a resource for you. So please feel comfortable to go ahead and contact her. And for those of you who are listening to Building My Legacy podcast today, thank you for being with us. And remember to visit our website at buildtomorrow.com with the number 2. and also our second website, startwithcollaboration.com. And again, Maria, thank you so much for being with us.
You're very welcome.
You've been listening to Building My Legacy podcast with Dr. Lois Sonstegard. To book your appointment with Dr. Sonstegard, visit www.buildtomorrow.com.